Welcome to the Open Line. Your window to the stories
behind the stories.
Inside the news through discussion and discovery on 560 CFOS.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong with chains upon my feet.
Good morning. Welcome to the Open Line. If you could read my mind. I hope you're reading this summer. I'm sorry, politely and correctly. Good morning. I'm Dave Carr. This is the Open Line on 560 CFOS. And reading is what it's all about today. We have three authors, three local authors, with three very different books. Linda Kenyon is the author of Sea Over Bow, a personal account of sailing the, not just the Atlantic, but the North Atlantic. When you talk to anybody who served in World War II and you say the two words together, North Atlantic, it's not always a happy thing for them. So it's interesting that, but you're here with an account of it, so I'm going to presume just for the moment that it's a happy thing for you, and then we will get into the elements. Linda Kenyon, Sailing the Atlantic. The book is Sea Over Bow. Tell me about your book.
Well, as you suggested in your intro, the North Atlantic is one of the truly wild places left in the world. And it's not a place that I ever expected to find myself. I wasn't a sailor when I started out. In fact, the story begins with me living in a little condo in Waterloo, where I lived at the time. I had my books and my armchair, and I had just, my marriage of 25 years had just ended really badly, and I decided that I was never, ever going to get involved with a man again, never mind do anything besides read my books and go to work and come home, have a glass of wine, read my books.
Absolutely. That's a life.
Yeah. Yeah,
I like
it.
I like it.
And then I met a man who was a sailor, and I don't know how I let him talk me into going sailing, but I did. He had his boat up here at Penetanguishene, and I went out sailing with him, and I was just hooked. And I was also at a point in my life where I thought, what have I got to lose? He had always wanted to sail across the Atlantic, so I said, sure.
I'm sorry, what?
Huh? Yeah, I know. He'd always wanted to sail across the Atlantic. He'd been sailing since he was, maybe 8 years old, so very accomplished sailer.
Chris, right?
Chris, that's right.
Chris, what are you going to do today? I don't know. I think I'll sail across the Atlantic.
That's Chris. That's Chris for sure. So I quit my job and sold everything I owned and set out. We sailed in the Great Lakes for a couple of years while I learned how to sail, because it's kind of important to know how to sail before you do a thing like that.
Yeah.
And then we set out across, we sailed down to the Caribbean, and then when the time of year was right, we headed north and sailed across the Atlantic.
There's a time of year.
May. Okay. May. So you have this little window where the icebergs are gone and the hurricanes haven't really whipped up yet.
Yeah, okay. We played Suzanne Vega's Luca, and your face lit up with a grin.
Boy, does that bring back memories.
Tell me why.
When we, at the end of our journey, we were preparing our boat to leave behind when we came back to Canada. We, of course, ran out of money, as anybody who does long voyaging does, and we had to come back to Canada to work for a few years. So we were leaving it in a boatyard in Portugal, and being cheap Canadians, instead of having the boatyard people do the work, we did all our own work. So we were working alongside these crews of Portuguese men and a lot of workers from North Africa who were working on the other boats, and they would play pop music at full blast and sing it out. And they knew all the words. They knew what the words sounded like, but I don't think they knew what they were saying. And when the Luca song particularly amused me, I thought, okay, look at all these battered women around me. Right.
And these Portuguese workers are on the dock, and they're just, my name is Luca.
Exactly.
I live on the second floor.
Exactly. It's so funny.
Tell me, broadly, sailing the Great Lakes, or sailing the Atlantic Ocean. You had sailed the Great Lakes. People say the Great Lakes have their own weather system. But I can't believe for a second that sailing the Great Lakes is anything like sailing the North Atlantic.
Well, in many ways, it's actually harder. It's rougher sailing because waters are so, the weather changes so much over land. I mean, in the Great Lakes, we're all surrounded by land, mm-hmm. and all kinds of different systems are moving through all the time. So the weather changes quickly, and the seas are different. The interval between waves is much shorter. The waves are steeper, and the water's choppier, and it kicks up suddenly. You can have a really nice day, and then suddenly you're in really choppy, uncomfortable weather. Really, I think some of the worst sailing we've had has been in the Great Lakes when it's just suddenly kicked up and caught us. In Lake Erie, we were caught one time, and it was really bad. Mm. Running up the Wingfield Basin one time, we had to run into the basin to get out of weather. And I don't know anyone who sails or knows Wingfield Basin. The entrance to it is, I think, 4 feet wide, or it looks like that from the water. So,
I know.
But in the ocean, the interval's much, much longer. So you can have big seas. You can be sailing in 6 foot seas, but it's a long, slow swell. So it just sort of lifts the boat up, and then the boat comes down again gently. Whereas in the Great Lakes, the interval can be 3 or 4 seconds between the waves. So it's like just bang, bang, bang.
If I were going to sail the North Atlantic, it would be on the Queen Elizabeth II. What was the boat you were on?
Well, I must say one time we did look into sailing on the Queen Elizabeth II, but decided that we didn't have enough formal wear or money to do it. So we were sailing on a steel sailboat, a 43-foot Roberts design steel sailboat.
Single mast.
Single mast. Made for ocean sailing, 20 tons, heavy, heavy, heavy boat.
Okay.
Yeah. No fun in the harbors to maneuver around, but out in the ocean, it was fantastic. It took the seas just fabulously.
Really?
Yeah. The boat was great. Chris was great. I was the weak link.
I there are stories about people who sail the Atlantic, and not all of them end well. Yeah. And for probably a couple of people, they still haven't ended, as in, quote, and never seen again, close quote. Why, Linda? 43-foot single mast? I'm sorry, but I say this pretty much in jest. Are you nuts?
Well, a lot of people ask that, and I think if you ask most of my family, they'll probably agree that I'm nuts, but it's one of those things that you start out gradually.
What made it okay?
What made it okay for me to do it?
Well, from concept to physically doing it, calculating weather, talk about rough days and calm days and stormy days, doing all, and then actually doing it and winding up on the far side of the Atlantic. What made it work?
Yeah, I'd have to say what made it okay was how much I loved being on the water the very first time I went out sailing. Like, I couldn't believe the feeling. I've always been someone who likes to trek through the woods and spend a lot of time outside. I've really been someone who just likes to wander. Mm-hmm. And then to get out on the water in a sailboat and do that, where the only thing that is propelling you is the wind, and you've got all the room in the world to just keep going, it was a fantastic feeling. And you get, it's like an addiction. So first I wanted to sail to Beausoleil from Penetanguishene. Ooh, that was a big sail. And then, and it just went on and on from there. In the years that I was learning to sail, we sailed back and forth through Lake Huron and through Lake Ontario, Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, and back while I was learning it all. And then you just get hungry for more space and more room. It's really, when it's not beating you up, it's really beautiful out there.
So was it incremental enough that when you, the idea of North Atlantic, that was just, this is the next logical step, or was there a cold feet aspect ever to undertaking this?
There was for sure a cold feet aspect when we left Antigua. We were leaving from Antigua to do our crossing, and when we set out there, at first we were sailing, you have to sail north, and then you turn east to cross the ocean. So to get to the right latitude that you've got the winds and the seas, you have to go north. And the going, when we first set out from Antigua, I think we both thought, oh, what are we doing here? Chris only admitted this much later, and he probably, if you asked him now, wouldn't admit it. But I can tell you that he said that. And when we made the turn to at about the latitude of Bermuda, when we made the turn to cross the North Atlantic, that then it really did hit me, because the weather was turning bad, too. And I was thinking, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And there's no turning
and there's
back.
There's no tales about things going wrong at sea around Bermuda at all.
Never.
No. There's not a thing.
No.
Nothing I've ever read.
No. I don't even know what you're talking about.
No. I must have dreamt it.
You're talking about some location in the ocean that you could triangulate on.
Yes, absolutely.
I see.
Points there, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. I am a trained professional. Kids, don't try this at home. And now I've completely lost my train of thought.
You're welcome.
and it had to do with Linda. So I'm going to continue to think about it, and I'm going to try to come back to that. And it's interesting. There are two Chrises in these books, and they're two very different Chrises. When you were sailing the Atlantic, the question I wanted to ask was about putting this book together.
Yeah.
Did you chronicle this thing in minutia out in the Atlantic, or did you have to dredge this up when you got? How did you translate the experience day to day into a book?
Yeah, that's actually really kind of an interesting question. So there are a number of pieces to it. One is that you have to keep a ship's log. So at certain times every day, you have to write a little thing, mm-hmm. The wind is like this, is where we are, here's how the wind is. You keep a little log, but because I'm a writer, when I was doing the log, there was always a paragraph there saying, and then today we had this for lunch, and Chris has got himself in a knot about the preventer that broke loose. So I had that. I also, when it was calm enough, I keep a journal. As a writer, I just always keep a journal. So I had my journal for when it was calm enough. And then sometimes I would write letters home on my computer, which I could occasionally send if we could get signal through the SSB. So I had those three sources.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that I was writing a book when I did that, but I was able to pull all those together into the book.
When did you decide to actually create a book about what you had just done? Because you have previous writings.
Yeah. And none of them have been this kind of personal memoir stuff. I'd done a little bit of travel writing. Most of it had been fiction. I wrote mm-hmm. short stories and fiction. So I think the impetus for me was when I got back, I really wanted to share how beautiful it was out there and how scary. And most people don't get to know what it's like out in the North Atlantic.
Well, Linda, when you start writing, and you had previous works, and now you sit down to write this book in particular, Sea Over Bow, do you write at 3 a.m? Do you write at 4 p.m? Do you stop for tea? What's your process?
Well, I can only write first thing in the morning, and I can only write for a couple hours.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm a very slow writer. And when I sat down to write this book, I didn't really know what I was doing because I'd never done a book-length project before.
Oh,
and I thought, okay,
okay,
so I'm just going to write this account of we started at Lake Erie and went down the canal, and then we went here, then we went there. I did this magnificent 80,000-word first draft that was just exactly that, told all about going across the ocean. And then I began working with an editor who said, no, have you ever heard of a narrative arc? A story has a beginning and a middle and an end. Mm-hmm. You've got to shape this material. And unless you put some of yourself into this book, unless you put some of your past and your the impact that this journey had on you and what a big step it was for you as mm-hmm. an armchair reader to go and sail across the ocean, it's not going to be interesting to anyone. So in the end, I went through 5 drafts doing that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, until I got the book to where it is now. So.
Okay. But mostly in the first couple of hours of the day.
First couple hours of the day. And right now I'm very lucky because we're avoiding the hurricane season by spending the summer at our family property south of Owen Sound, just outside the town of Durham. And Chris has built me a lovely treehouse, and I go up to my treehouse in the morning for the first couple hours every day and work. I'm actually trying to start a novel now, and I have real respect for what you do because I'm finding that so hard because everything's wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things you can put in, so many things you can do. I don't really know where to start.
Yeah. I've tried writing fiction myself in the past in a way of a short story type of idea.
Yeah.
I found it very difficult as well.
Yeah. Linda Kenyon, what was your worst day?
I'd have to say it was the gale. We got hit by a massive gale when we were just a couple hundred miles off the Azores, and it was the most terrifying thing I've ever been through.
Wow.
What was your absolutely best day?
Oh, there were so many of them. I would just say on a calm day of sailing with the tropic bird trailing along behind the boat, and there are birds right out in the middle of the North Atlantic. It's bizarre. Shearwaters out there, not tropic birds, but that would be the most beautiful day. Yeah.
What's next for you, Linda? You mentioned it.
I only wish I knew. People say to me, are you going to write a sequel to your memoir? I'm not, because really, we just lived happily ever after, and that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
So I am, but I do have a novel that I'm really interested in writing. I've thought about for years. I've got stuff together. If I can ever figure out how to do it, that's what's next.
Okay.